If you would please, join me in the book called Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs. We got started on this last session, but I want to go back to the very beginning of it with a real quick reminder of my take on this. I believe that this was an opera, an Israeli opera written during the very early part of King Solomon's reign. We know that Israel's empire had its peak during the kingdom of Solomon, and that things were really going well in Israel as the temple was completed and as Solomon was building his palace complex. Everything was peaceful. Everything was prosperous. And that is a good environment in which art presents itself. And opera would be a form of art, wouldn't it? I don't believe that this was written by King Solomon. I don't think that this is about King Solomon. But I believe it's dedicated to King Solomon and celebrating love between two young people that both worked for King Solomon. Now, are they real people or are they characters that are made up? Don't know. Another thing that I talked about briefly is a lot of people want to make this into an allegory or spiritualize it. They want it to be about the love of God for Israel, or perhaps the love of Jesus for his church. I understand the desire to go that direction. After all, the Bible is supposed to be our guide for living good, solid spiritual lives. But honestly, I think this is just simply a celebration of love. And so that's how I present it. It is, though, very graphic in places, and so we need to remind the kiddos that they should be busy somewhere else while we go over this PG-13 opera. With that in mind, let's begin again. First, the title at the very beginning, chapter 1, verse 1, The Song of Songs, which means that it is the ultimate song. It's the ultimate piece of work, which is Solomon's, or I think more likely, which is dedicated to Solomon. Now, we're using the English Standard Version to go through this time around, and I appreciate very much that they have tried to annotate what is obvious in the verbiage through this book, that there are multiple speakers, or in the way that I present it, performers. And so they use the word she, they use the word he, and they use the word others, I believe. And what's represented by that is the young woman in the story, the young man in the story, and then a chorus. I think that that chorus may switch between men and women, or maybe a mixed gender chorus as part of the performance. Let's begin with the lady. And you have to imagine performers on the stage singing with musical accompaniment, okay? Verse 2. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For your love is better than wine. Your anointing oils are fragrant. Your name is oil poured out, and therefore virgins love you. So this is the young lady singing about the young man she's in love with and how she loves kissing him. She loves the way he smells. She even loves his name, which is never given, because it is something special, like special oil. And that's why the girls like him. That's why the girls are in love with him. Because remember, he's not married, and so he becomes kind of the object of their affections in their conversations back and forth. And as Ari said, it seems as if everybody in their circle works within the kingdom of King Solomon. Remember that one of the things that Samuel was told by God to warn the Israelites about was when a king comes into power, they're going to end up drafting young men into their military service, but they're also going to draft young men and women into the service of the palace, the service of the kingdom, logistical things. And so more than likely, this young lady works in the kingdom, works in the palace, works for Solomon and for Solomon's family, his wives, his concubines. That actually comes up later in the context. And so that is why we read in verse 4, "Draw me after you, let us run." So this is her speaking to her loved boyfriend. "Oh, I want to be with you. I want us to go out." And then she mentions this, "The king has brought me into his chambers." Now, in the past, many people have interpreted that as she is being brought in as a future wife or concubine of King Solomon. I disagree with that. As I've already said, I think she actually works for him. And so this is a reference to her going in to work in the palace for King Solomon, and she has some sort of responsibility going in and doing what he tells her to do. Now we have the first choral response to all this. "We will exult and rejoice in you. We will extol your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you." Now that's the chorus singing about the boyfriend, about the young man. They are expressing the same feelings that she was, where she was talking about your love is better than wine, right? And so I think it's possible that this chorus would have been a chorus of ladies. Back to the lady again, back to the young woman. "I am very dark, but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon." So this is one of the reasons I think that the chorus in verse 4 were ladies, because she sings back to the daughters of Jerusalem. So people, women who grew up at Jerusalem, I actually think they grew up in the royal circles. They are palace ladies. And for that reason, I believe they've never done a hard day's work in their life outside the palace grounds. And so she has just been brought in from elsewhere in the country. She is an outsider. And she also is different than them. She has had to do hard work outside. And so she doesn't have a pale complexion like they might have. She is exceptionally tanned. Later we'll talk about the idea that she probably comes from the town or village called Shunem, which is on the north central part of the Valley of Jezreel. It's just a few miles south and a little bit east from Nazareth in the lower Galilee hills. And so she seems to have had to work hard until she was drafted into the service of King Solomon and working at the palace. Again, let's read verse 5. "I'm very dark, but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar," which are famous for being made of, I think, black goat's hair, so very, very dark, "like the curtains of Solomon," which would be the curtains in the palace, probably, again, made of dark material. "Do not gaze at me because I'm dark. So don't stare at me because I look so much different than you, because the sun has looked upon me. My mother's sons were angry with me," a poetic way of talking about her brothers. they made me keeper of the vineyards. So my older brothers made me go and work outside all the time. I was constantly out in the sun, and that's why I look so tan and dark. But my own vineyard I have not kept. So her brothers forced her to work in the vineyards, but she couldn't take care of her own self in a way of keeping from being so tanned and sun-kissed. Then she sings to her boyfriend, "Tell me, you whom my soul loves, where you pasture your flock, where you make it lie down at noon." So this is where we find out this is not King Solomon. The young man singing in this opera is a shepherd. At the very least, that's his job for King Solomon. He probably has some other jobs as well. He's been drafted into this service. And so she wants to know, where are you working? Where are you going to work today? Where are you going to make your flocks lay down when the siesta time comes? Because, you know, when middle of the day comes and the sun is right at its peak in the sky, everybody knocks off of work, has a nice leisurely lunch, maybe takes a little nap, but they stay in the shade. And so she wants to know, where are you going to take your midday break? "For why should I be like one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions?" Now, his companions would be the other shepherds, because Solomon has a lot of sheep, a lot of goats, a lot of animals. And so he's got a lot of husbandmen, servants that are working for him. And so she doesn't want to be out there in her little veil, looking from place to place, trying to figure out where her boyfriend is, the young man that she's chasing after. So give me an exact place. Now, we will talk more about how they spend their little siesta time out here in the country later in the opera. But now we go to his first appearance. Verse 8. "If you do not know, O most beautiful among women," so if you don't know where I'm taking care of the sheep, "then follow the tracks of the flock and pasture your young goats beside the shepherd's tents." Now, this is where we find out not only does she work in the palace, she also has responsibilities to take care of some of the animals that belong to the palace grounds, which makes perfect sense because we already know that the palace complex has a lot of visitors come in every single day. And they have to have a lot of meat, both domestic and wild, and a lot of cheeses and milk and wines and grains and vegetables and all of this to feed all of the people that come to the palace to meet with King Solomon. And so if you're going to keep up with that demand, then you're going to have your own home flocks that are available to produce the milk and the cheeses and the meat that are going to be used in the palace restaurant. And so she's probably got a job of taking care of the sheep as well, taking care of the goats. And so he tells her, "Hey, just you, when you take your sheep out or your goats out, then you go and look for where the rest of us are." And then he says this, verse 9. This is where he starts sweet-talking her. "I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with strings of jewels." Now he probably, being in the palace grounds, has seen some of the visiting chariots, including the visiting chariots of Egypt, with their very well-decorated chariot horses. And so he starts talking about how you're as beautiful as some of those really well adorned chariot horses from Egypt. Now, we already talked about Solomon's chariots and how some of their horses were valued at many tens of thousands of dollars just to buy the horse, let alone talk about all the decoration that might go on it. So he thinks she's beautiful and talks about that. Now, there'll be more detail about this later, but she wears jewelry. She wears a veil, we can tell, because that's already been mentioned. It'll be mentioned again. And so he's talking about how lovely she is when he gets to see her. Now we bring the chorus back in. My suspicion is that this might be the young men of the chorus singing in follow-up to what our young man has just said. We will make for you ornaments of gold studded with silver. Now we're back to the lady. And she sings, while the king was on his couch. Now a couch can be a bed, but it can also simply be the place where he is reclining, where he is relaxing. And we've already said that she seems to be required from time to time to attend to him. And so, while the king is relaxing on his chaise lounge, my nard gave forth its fragrance. So she talks about how part of her responsibility is when she goes to attend to the king, she wears scented ointment. She wears perfume. That would be normal procedure. Everybody in the palace is going to be dressed in really nice clothing. We've actually seen this. The Queen of Sheba referenced that sort of thing. And they're also going to be not just simply clean, they are going to be perfumed, because everything in the palace is there to heighten the senses and please the senses, not just simply of King Solomon, but of all his royal visitors, all of his high dignitary visitors. So she starts this part of her song, this part of her opera performance, by saying, when I go into the king, I'm wearing my perfume. And then her mind runs off to him, to her boyfriend. My beloved is to me a sachet of myrrh that lies between my breasts. Now that's very intimate. So they would wear little sacks of special scented ointments and things right there between their breasts in order to be heat activated and to be very perfuming. And so she basically says, I'd like for my boyfriend to be right there. Like I said, there's a lot of PG-13 material here. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Now, En-Gedi is a little community on a stream that dumps into the west shore, midwest shore of the Dead Sea. And so it's not too terribly far from Jerusalem. My guess is that there's probably some sort of royal residence at En-Gedi, because it is a lovely place. I have been there. I know that a couple of times I've been there, lots of tourists flock in there. A lot of the young Israeli school groups go there, because there's some great pools and some great waterfalls just up the stream. And there's lots of animals nearby. And then the stark scenery of all of that greenery along the stream against the wilderness of Judea and the Dead Sea. It's a special place. And of course, it's warm in the winter. It's a perfect place to have like a winter residence for the royalty. So she may have been down there. She may have known that place because of that. There's blossoms. Not just the blossoms of the henna, but also the vineyards that are right next to this stream and are irrigated from it. And it's a very fragrant place when the vines first come into bloom. And so she says, that's what my boyfriend's like to me. I want to smell good for him. I want him to be on my chest, in my bosom. And wow, he smells wonderful. And he then sings back. Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves. And so doves are, of course, a bird that are mentioned quite a bit in poetry. Very beautiful. They kind of dart back and forth when they're on the ground. And that may be what he's referencing, is that she's got that little coyness to her where she looks back and forth and not directly at him. And she's got a veil on, remember. So a lot of her eye movement is going to be where his focus is at. Then she sings back to him. Behold, you are beautiful, my beloved, truly delightful. Now, remember I told you earlier that he said, come meet me. She wanted, first of all, to meet him where the siesta time took place for taking care of the flocks that he's in charge of. And she has to take goats out as well. And he said, bring your goats to follow where we're taking our sheep and meet me, and we'll have time together. Well, here's that time being described by her. Our couch is green. So Solomon's couch, his reclining area, you know, his little chaise lounge was mentioned just a few verses earlier. But she talks about the grass where they're at. Maybe a mossy area under the trees, because that's what she mentions next. Our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedar. Our rafters are of pine. So that's the great outdoors that she's describing. She's saying the place where we meet and kind of chill together is God's green outdoor temple, the place of wonder. And then she says, I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Now, the Sharon was a place to the west of Judea proper. It's part of the plain, the coastal plain of Judea, and then up into what we would call Samaria today. And the wild plants, when they went in bloom, made this place wonderful. And so the rose of, don't think of a rose like a bramble type of rose, but rather more of a flower that's popping up, like a crocus or something of that nature, early in the spring. That's what she's got in mind. And same thing with the lily of the valley. It's a very fragrant flower. And so she says, that's what I am to you, I know. And he sings back, oh, as a lily among brambles, so is my love among the young women. Now that's nice, isn't it? He says, oh, yes, you are my lily, but you know what? Every other girl is like a bramble to me. Verse number 3, she sings back. As an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. So she gets complimented by him. He turns around, compliments her. She compliments him back. So it's definitely this back and forth of loving on each other verbally. Now, they don't think of an apple like we think of apples, like a Delicious Red or a Granny Smith or anything like that. Those sort of domesticated apples much later in history. And most certainly, Israel, a little bit too hot for a lot of apple trees that we would think of today. This is probably some other fruit tree that was native to Israel. Some people have suggested a citron, something of that nature. But whatever it is, it puts on a very fragrant flower before it makes a very fragrant fruit. And she says, That's what you're like to me. With great delight, I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. She's talking about kissing him again. So there's a, as the Princess Bride has the quote from Fred Savage character, is this a kissing book? Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. And so she's thinking about kisses again during their little siesta time. And then she said, he brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me is love. Now, of course, at Jerusalem is Solomon's banqueting house. And it would have been very well decorated, lots of banners and things out through it. But here they are, they're in their outside meeting place, and it is their special place of loving on each other. Sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am sick with love. They're, and you can probably picture this. These young lovers, now understand when I use that word lovers, I'm not talking about they're involved sexually yet. These young lovers are out there probably feeding each other their lunches and enjoying each other's attention. But also being probably a little bit more intimate than what would normally be allowed in public. So they're probably a little bit of a private setting. His left hand is under my head. That's what hers, she says. And his right hand embraces me or caresses me. And then she says this, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles and the does of the field, that you not stir up or awaken love until it pleases, which is basically give love time. Give love its time. It will come when it's just right. Now, these two, they work for Solomon, so they are not necessarily free to get married just yet. And so we will continue with their love story in this opera the next time God gives us the chance to get into his word.